Hi, welcome to my podcast. I'm Dr. Lauren Goodall. I'm a clinical psychologist, and this is Psychology in Short. Today's topic is about competition, and most of us know what competition is. When we think of competition, we think of physical competition. We think of athletics. We think of weightlifting. We think of triathlons, marathons, things like that. We don't necessarily think about competition in the concept of who we're connected with, meaning our most intimate relationships. This is something that I think is really relevant, so I thought I'd take a few minutes and talk about it. It has come up quite frequently in couples work, couples counseling. And what's the emphasis that I see the most about this topic is that one person does it and the other person tends to not know. They don't see it, probably because they don't want to see it, or because, as this person might say, is, I don't even think like that, okay? And competition or topics of competition come in usually when there's some type of communication breakdown, the relationship is having issues. But when, say, I would bring this topic up, it's just like deer in the headlights, right? And then all of a sudden, as I try to describe it, people become more and more aware. At least one person becomes aware of saying, oh my gosh, this has been going on. I know this has been going on for a long time. It's kind of like having termites in your house, eating away the foundation of your house, and you just didn't know they were there because they were kind of quiet and kind of subtle. But yet, because there's damage in your relationship, and you know there's damage, you have to start looking at where. And the biggest problem with damage in intimate relationships is people don't talk about it. They argue about it. They fight. They shut down. But the real topics that are happening are often really overlooked. And competition is one that can be on the underbelly, so to speak. It's not out in the open because it's usually one person doing it and another person fairly unaware because they don't think like that. Quote, unquote, I just don't think like that. Why would I go looking for that? All right, so talking about what competition looks like in a negative skew. I think a little competition in life is always a good thing. It allows us to keep our edge. It keeps us propelling forward. It motivates us. Okay, but when it's on the underbelly or the underside, where it's not out there in the present, then it's usually connected to some other negative traits, negative patterns. And so I figured I'd take a few minutes and talk a little bit about what competition looks like in your intimate relationship to give you a couple different examples. Okay, so one example is the person who has to win the arguments. This is usually the person who has to have the last word. And things have to go their way. They keep coming at you. They keep coming at you to prove their point. It is like everything becomes like an illegal argument, okay? You present one side, they present the other, and they're saying they keep coming, but they have to win. Everything stops once they win. And part of that process is a one-upping effort. Say, for instance, you are working on becoming a better cook and you're taking some time and you're experimenting with recipes and some are coming out and some are not so great. Okay, but you want to do that and you're working on it, say, for your kids or what have you. Now, what ends up happening in more of a competitive relationship, there's no real threatening dialogue. But say your spouse then walks in with some great Chinese or Vietnamese food or some great culinary great food from the local restaurant, okay? So basically, it's kind of undermining what you're trying to do. It's more indirect. Just thought I'd help you out a bit. And it would be guised under the just thought I'd help you out a bit. Okay, so they're bringing in something else to kind of compete with what you already have out there. And so there is some bids to kind of mess you up and throw you off a bit, but it's very discreet. Some ways the competition comes in is a silent treatment. Usually you think that a person who's competing with you is always going to be direct and in your face, but that's not necessarily the case. Some people compete very silently, and they may use some passive-aggressive comments, okay? So they're not directly aggressive towards you. They just use subtleties. I think a real common one is, you know, how do I look in this? And they might just leave out some words that you may need to hear, and that's sort of an offhanded, an offhanded poke at you, so to speak. Withholding behavior, that is another one. So if there's something that you really want, something that you really value, and let's just say it's more emotional, they will not deliver. They will be short on that delivery. They'll either not have enough time, they'll catch up with you later, another call came in, things like that. There will always be a, quote, reasonable reason why they're withholding. It will not appear obvious. And the end game of this is there is a lack of emotional support, okay? They can't quite support you as much as you would like them to support you. And in the sense that, you know, what I'm saying is this is a direct change from who they used to be. I'm not talking about somebody who's never able to give. I'm talking about somebody who used to give and then just stops giving. So it's a distinctive difference between how they were and how they are. So that baseline changes. And because of that, you are going to notice that the other party is going to be much more insecure, a little off balance, not sure how to take things, but yet can't quite nail what's wrong because it isn't that obvious. A person who is competitive may tend to be a bit boastful. They have some narcissistic traits. Because they're constantly trying to compete in your game that you didn't even know there was a game going on. So anything that goes well in their world, whether they get a raise or they do well or they get to collaborate with person X, person Y, person Z, you're definitely going to hear about it. Okay, whereas when the other person who they like to compete with has, you know, gets a raise or what have you, there's just not as much interest there. It kind of falls short. And when a person wants to compete with you, they subtly may give you passive reminders of things that didn't quite work out. So say you're trying to do something and you're a little insecure about it, stepping forward in it, they'd be like, they could talk very gently, appear supportive, but yet trying to undermine you, reminding you of, oh yeah, don't quite do it like that. Remember, just don't quite do it like that. As if, hey, last time that wasn't so great. A person who competes with you will start comparing you to other people. The Joneses are everywhere. The Joneses have this. You are now going to have to look like the Jones's wife or the Jones's weight loss or she does X, Y, Z, A, B, C, that kind of thing. So there's going to be a comparison to other people. There's also, and the idea is basically just to throw you off a bit. You know, what do they say? I just didn't want you to get a big head, you know, when you're growing up and, you know, when parents withhold congratulating you or praise. Sometimes dysfunctional families will say, well, we just didn't want you to get a big head, you know. Well, the competing partner will operate on the same premise, like, oh, you know, if I give her a compliment or give him a compliment, it's just going to keep going from there. And so you don't get those compliments. And in fact, when they're with other people, okay, the person who likes to compete is going to be much more natural, much more authentic, laugh, crack jokes with other people. And you say to yourself, my gosh, they're never like that when they're with me. Like, they used to be like that, but now I don't see that level of engagement. Why do you not see that level of engagement? Because there's now a competition in your relationship that you didn't even know was going on, but apparently is. So there is this sense of trying to make you jealous, trying to throw you off, withholding behavior. And while all of that is going on, there is this also this element of monitoring, subtle monitoring. I'm not talking like super control freak monitoring. I'm talking about subtle monitoring your stuff, what you're doing, what you're joining, who do you know? And they will act supportive, okay? But somehow inflating you tends to deflate them. Not because you think like that, but it's because they think like that. Somehow building you up is turning them into a minus. And nothing could be further in your mind in terms of that process, because you see yourselves as very different people with different strengths. But no, a person with a competitive mindset almost doesn't want you to have more advantages, because somehow that means they are less than. And I think that happens a lot with narcissists, but it happens with a lot of people outside of narcissism. So the competitive person does want to subtly monitor what you're doing, where you're going, who you know, and show interest. They will show genuine interest, but it's not for your gain. It's just because they need to know what the bar is and how far to jump and how far to excel past the bar. Who do you know? Well, you know people in this circle. Well, then I'm going to need to know people in this circle, kind of thing. But the reason I take time to talk about these approaches is that they're really hard to spot. Usually when somebody starts to recognize it, it's years down the road, because you don't want to know that your partner is actually quite competitive with you in a very indirect or, shall I say, discreet and more manipulative manner. There's a level of manipulation. They're constantly trying to skew things, so you're a bit off balance. You're not sure why. You can't quite put your finger on it, but you feel it. And how it will manifest will be in other forms of communication in your relationship. Other things will start pulling apart. There will be more distance. That will be the way that this undercurrent will be exposed. In the process of looking at other things, and as we start to peel things out, there will be this element. But it's usually been long overlooked, usually by years. Mainly because there's always one person in this venue who really wants to compete, but somehow feels that every gain on your end is a minus on their end. And obviously that's a huge problem to have in any type of relationship, marriage, etc. So I thought I'd take a little time to talk about what competition looks like in couples work. And so it has many different faces. So I just wanted to give you some ideas of what to look for and how to look for and how to look at somebody's responses, you know, and actually broaching the ideas, like, you know, when this gets exposed, why does it, you know, if I make this gain, Why do you perceive this, that somehow you are less than? Because I value you for X, Y, and Z, blah, 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 that kind of thing. But this is an undercurrent that has a very hard time being exposed in couples work, couples conflict. Okay, so I think we'll close it up here. I just wanted to take this quick segment and identify it and talk a little bit about undercurrents, because I love undercurrents. There is in psychology, there are all these great headings, and I've certainly talked about many of them if you look through my library. But it's these subheadings, these sub features that I also like to address, because they often go overlooked. All right, so if you like the way I present things, talk about things, you might be interested in my book. It is called Bipolar is Not an STD, and it talks about my work in the field, specifically with mood disorders, relationships, and a little bit of my own experience in there. And it's available on Amazon. And thank you for joining me, and I look forward to having you back. Hi, welcome to my podcast. I'm Dr. Lauren Goodall, a clinical psychologist, and this is Psychology in Short. Before we start, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my book. It's called Bipolar is Not an STD. I know the title's a little wild, but I did that with intention. Considering there was millions of books out on bipolar, and I knew that I had some information that I thought would really make a difference, so I came up with a little kind of a wild title. Anyway, aside from the title, I've worked with people over two decades, and so I cover different aspects of mood disorders, anxiety, panic, bipolar, depression, how to go about understanding that stuff and taking it apart. And what I call easier, faster ways to get people help faster. That was the bottom line, and that was the purpose of writing that book. I also talk a little bit about myself before I started the profession and some struggles in my life. So if you're a person who likes to hear about people's struggles, then you probably like what I have to write about. Again, it's called Bipolar is Not an STD, and it is available on Amazon. Okay, today's topic I want to talk about is dating after divorce or dating after loss. So this segment of people really, they've been away from dating for a period of years usually. So deciding to go back into that forum is kind of a big decision. And so these are some of the things that come up in that venue that I thought, you know, it's really worth putting something together to discuss some of this stuff. And so this is what I came up with. Usually when I meet with clients, they'll say, hey, I have a list. I've decided, you know, this is what I'm looking for. And it's usually a list of adjectives. And shockingly enough, they're all positive adjectives, okay? And that's just the way we are. We think, hey, I just want to be organized. This is the stuff that I really, really value. And that's fine, and that's good, okay? That's about your own personal clarity, okay? What I haven't heard from anyone, is, hey, I'm looking for somebody who's pretty ambitious, that they're willing to step on people's faces to get ahead. I'm looking for somebody who's kind of greedy, who would like to drain my bank accounts. I'm looking for somebody who's a little spicy with the truth, a little flexible with the truth. Or somebody who has no empathy for others. Sign me up. Okay. People don't talk about these traits. And we act as if these traits don't exist. Yet these traits do exist. And they are out there. But everyone's kind of focusing on their own positive adjectives. And yes, there are great people out there, okay? This is not to say that you cannot have a great dating experience. But what I'm going to encourage you to have instead is a knowledgeable dating experience, which is a bit different, okay? And so what makes you more knowledgeable, so to speak, okay? First of all, keeping in mind that generally we like to date because we're social beings. We like the flow. We like the attention. We like the recognition. It's validating. You know, when somebody knows what we're talking about or has a similar frame of reference or there's some level of attraction that's mutual, I mean, that's all good. And we want that. But we don't want what I call is false starts. Okay. And what are some of those examples of false starts? False starts is kind of some signs that something isn't quite right. Okay. False starts might be somebody who's always willing to text you. Okay. But not necessarily get on the phone. Okay, somehow, you know, the phone isn't as private or something like that. So they say. If you're dating and you can't actually talk to them by phone in a pretty, in a normative space, you know, with any degree of frequency, then you got to start asking questions. Usually people who aren't talking on the phone aren't talking for a reason. You just don't happen to know that reason. Okay. Long distance relationships. I've got nothing against them. There's people who've definitely worked things out on long distance relationships. But I tend to think that when people are more local, you get to see them, you get to kind of, they're familiar in your area. There's no reason why you can't get together, so to speak, things like that. So keeping in mind certain false starts. Another example of a false start is somebody who wants to just overshare, okay? Oversharing, I think we associate it with intimacy, but it's a kind of intimacy that isn't guaranteed, okay? Oversharing is, okay, my mom died and family's got to divide up the assets, but my siblings, they're all greedy. I'm the only one who would save the estate. And I'm thinking, that's a lot of intel for somebody you just meet, okay? So questioning the judgment of that, sharing that kind of information. Because really, people, you know, they feel like if they can get you to understand some of the situations in their life, that's fine. But I call those situations sympathy situations because there's going to be a one-sided favorability with them. Oh, you know, I went through the divorce with my ex, you know, the custody issue. And, you know, this person was terrible, terrible, terrible. Keep in mind, you're only getting one person's perception. You do not have the advantage of hearing both parties' views on the matter. Okay, but it is a flag in the sense that it's too much information, but it's also saying that there's a lot of clutter here. That whatever went on, if people are bringing up their exes in any capacity, they haven't parked them, they haven't worked through it. Or even if the person just died, you know, and they're going to explaining how the person died and all that, that's not compartmentalized information. And really, they're not up for dating. So if you get those types of experiences where people are oversharing or, you know, opening themselves up in a situation where, you know, you show somebody your assets, you invite them, would you invite a stranger into your home? And under the guise of dating, people do it all the time, but it's not really wise because you really don't know who you're dealing with, okay? Just like if you want to go to, say, work in a particular profession, You take classes, and you get degrees, and you get certifications. And with every class, you still decide at each class, it's like, do I want to go forward? Do I like this information enough to move forward and continue to go through? Well, dating really needs to be the same way, because you want to have short snippets of time. You don't book big dates, long dates, dinner dates with people that you really don't know well. Save those for your close friends. When you want to date, you want to set up short periods of time, and then you build from there, meaning coffee, donuts, bagels, something simple, something this way. And basically what you're doing is you're trying on the fit and seeing if you can dialogue through those spaces. And if there is more interest, and it's really funny, we decide, I think the number is we decide who we like in 7 minutes. I mean, that's pretty fast. I mean, in terms of giving somebody a resume about yourself, we make decisions about people in 7 minutes if we're attracted enough to continue dialoguing with them. So it's a really short window, truth be told, that psychologically we make these types of decisions. But if you set up dates that are easy, that are casual, and that are simple, and you see how things go, don't let somebody describe themselves for you. I'm adventurous. Or, you know, let people show you who they are. They might say, instead, people don't say, hey, I'm generally, okay. Usually, if they're an adventurous personality, usually they'll say, I like to swim, I like to travel. That tells you that they are a more adventurous personality. Versus somebody who's like, I like to read research. Read financial magazines. I follow stocks, things like that. It tells you different things about personality styles. But rarely do labels, you know, let somebody show you who they are rather than, quote, tell you who they are. Because some people like to describe themselves in a bit more favorable light, or not always totally accurate, unintentionally or intentionally. But if you let somebody show you who they are, and what do I mean by showing you? So if you go to a restaurant, you don't ask somebody how they treat other people. You watch how they treat other people. What are some flags in that situation? You watch how somebody treats a waitress, a server, anybody, just general public, anybody. Okay. How do they treat them? Do they treat people with different, reverence or, you know, more regard, less regard, things like that? That's information. And not all of that is good. So you want to be kind of aware of that. It's nice to go out with somebody who's social, but do you find that the person, for example, this is just an example that comes up, is that, you know, the person you're dating goes out of their way talking to the waitress a little bit too long, okay? And it's nice to be sociable and have general quick dialogue, and waitresses and waiters do that all the time to establish a little bit of rapport. But once you start asking where they're from and all that, it's starting to get a little elongated, okay? And that's kind of a, you know, just a little too social thing. People like people who are social. I think sociability is a nice trait, you know, but some people are shyer, okay? And they're really great people. They're just shyer, okay? So when you invite them to your Christmas party, you kind of know what you're going to have to do just to introduce them to a few people and things like that and kind of get them settled, where they're at, or one or two people, that kind of thing. But a person who's too sociable usually is going to be too sociable with somebody else besides you. Okay. If they have the ability to make you, make everybody feel comfortable, that's not a good sign. Okay. That's a sign that they are just a little too sociable. The contrast to that is the person who's just a little too jealous. That's really not a positive trait either. There are people who battle jealousy. I mean, if the partner's talking to X person, Y person, Z person, it doesn't even matter who it is. They feel like their time is infringed upon, and they tend to assert themselves like the designated Rottweiler, and tend to come up with some controlling stuff. They get mad very easily. They throw certain types of temper tantrums off to the side. You know, jealous people aren't great to work with either, okay? They have not resolved. Some people develop it through early years of abandonment, but people are not property, okay? And even if you're married to them, they are not your property. So you want somebody who respects you enough to not look at you as their object, okay? And so that would be another glaring thing. One way to recognize, I think, you know, in honeymoon phases of dating, and we call them honeymoon because basically when we decide we want to date somebody, we tend to give them all positive descriptors. They're just great in all these different areas. Well, truth be told, over time, you're going to figure out that not so much. We put our own spin on some of that because that's what we're looking for. And we want to believe that this other person has this. Okay, yes and no, right? Some things will fan out and other things will not. But the key is I always say, if you're going to go dating, did you ever go to the grocery store starving to death? I've done that quite a bit. And you're supposed to eat clean and you're supposed to forget the processed food. Well, guess what? When I go to the grocery store hungry, I'm hitting the Jet Puffed marshmallows, okay? And then a million other things. So it's not wise to go to the grocery store hungry. You will pick up everything. Or at least some personalities will. I will at least say that, and I fall into that some category. All right. But you don't want to go into dating hungry either. Okay, because if you're too hungry, you're not going to see the false starts. Okay, you're not going to see the sympathetic situation where a person says, oh, you know, but I'm going through this or this or this. That's not stuff you should be seeing out of the gate. In fact, I've heard a lot of people kind of play their hand down. People with assets don't tell people they have assets. They play them down. They don't show people they have assets out of the gate. And their rationale is they don't want a gold digger. They're not looking for somebody to max out their credit cards, okay? There are people that may appreciate their assets, but that's not what they're looking for. So if they kind of dumb down what they have or dumb down what they do, they want to know that the person that they're with and spending time with is somebody that really likes them versus their stuff. The only contrast I'm going to say to that is there are some people that are very, very looks oriented. They're very visible. They have to have certain types of cars, certain types of clothes. In that situation, I say they should be matched up equally, meaning people who are focused on externals should be with other people that are focused on externals. Okay. A, because that's all they're looking for. And both of them are, so you might as well be together, as opposed to somebody who's looking for more depth. There are people that really, aren't looking for depth, okay? And the thing is, you know, asking yourself, what type of intimacy are you looking for? You know, and some of the strongest relationships and marriages, I hear that they're their best friend. Okay, they don't necessarily say, oh, it's all about the sex, it's all about the sex. Because sex can change over time, okay? Sometimes the best intimacy is a best friend, okay? What does a best friend represent? Your best friend represents somebody that you could tell the wildest stuff to and trust. And no matter what goes on, they have your back. That's probably the highest compliment you can pay somebody. Okay, so don't necessarily think that if somebody, you know, when they say I'm looking for a best friend, well, you know, that means they're looking for substance, okay? So keep in mind things like that. So I said, be aware of sympathy situations, false starts. False starts is when everybody wants to dive in, and I think they call it love bombing these days, where they're constantly contacting you, okay, and all of that, and then they backpedal, okay, and that gets a person really, really confused because they're all in, and then they backpedal. And you don't want to have to go through that whole process of forward and then backward, because that's just too confusing. So you want to set a pace, and you want to set a grounded pace, a pace where you can be grounded, okay? It's great to be attracted to somebody. It's great to find somebody attractive, but you really don't want to be ungrounded. And what does ungrounded mean? Ungrounded means you give up your friends, you give up your family, you accept any kind of crumbs they have just to be with them. That is a disaster over time. Another disaster that plays out over time that looks good in the beginning is somebody who likes to text you all the time, call you all the time, and, you know, it's flattering at first and you're like, you know, but flattery over time or marriage starts to look like control, okay? Nobody who has control issues will ever come out to you on a date and say, look, I'm a control freak. They don't do that. Okay, they don't talk about their lack of empathy for people. You're going to have to find that out, and you're going to have to sort that out, okay? And it's more than a background check, so to speak. It's about seeing how people are with other people. How do they treat animals? How do they respond to different situations? You know, are they willing to drive to see you? Are they willing to drive hours to see you? Or do they expect you to do it? Somebody who's selfish with their time isn't that into you, okay? And if somebody says they have commitment issues, well, sometimes that can mean a couple different things. Sometimes it's because they're interested in somebody else as well, okay? And, you know, they'll say, oh, I just don't know if I'm ready, kind of this. Or basically it means that they've seen something in you that they're not so sure that they want to sign on for, but they don't have the courage to tell you, hey, there's some inconsistencies, I'm not totally on board. And in some ways, that's hard to say that. Instead, they say, I've got commitment issues, okay? And the disaster that I've heard that goes along with that is where somebody decides, because they've gone out for a long period of time, which is very confusing to the other person, right? Because they do want to be with them. They do want to be close with them. They're affectionate with them. So there's really, it's very confusing. But what will happen is people say, well, you know, I think you should just give them an ultimatum or give that person an ultimatum. Listen, you might win them in the short run on an ultimatum, but at the end of the day, they're going to resent you, and you don't win somebody that way. Okay? Using the ultimatum method just doesn't work. You're just going to have to decide to unhook yourself, as hard as it is, because usually people who have come across this kind of scenario have gone out for long periods of time, and it just somehow is a great relationship, but it never makes it to the next space. And sometimes commitment issues are, you know, because they had parents who are narcissists, okay, where ultimately they don't necessarily like, or they might be attracted to a person, but they're so concerned about being controlled in the big picture that they haven't resolved a lot of those issues and say they're available, but they're really not. And so what you end up with is these false starts, okay? Or as I also say, unseen hindrances. So look out for the sympathy situation. Keep your dating into small spaces, just like you're taking classes, because at any time you might decide, hey, there's some incompatibility here. Over time is going to show you who you have. Don't let somebody tell you who they are. Let them show you who they are, okay? And you're going to feel a lot better with your decision, okay? You don't have to stalk somebody to find out information. And, of course, I'm not for stalking in any capacity. I feel like if you need to do that, things are getting kind of wild to begin with. But keep in mind that, and also, don't go dating when you're hungry, okay? It's terrible because you're too open and too, you're just not going to see things for what they need to be. You'll take the crumbs. You won't recognize the false starts, the things that don't, you'll try to make some of those pieces that don't add up. And I think the last thing I want to say is that seeing is believing, okay? I know a lot of people do online dating. There's nothing really wrong with it, but I have heard a lot of people who get a lot of time wasted in that venue, okay? You know, there's such a thing as too much choice, okay? Too much choice is really a bad option, okay? You've seen that. They've done psychological studies on that left, right, and center, okay? You start to get confused. But not that. People waste a lot of people's time. That they will contact you constantly. It's not that. But it's not relationships that can go anywhere. They're either looking for an intimate experience, but they want to keep the foot in the door kind of thing. But they're also keeping the foot in the door with other people. So online dating, caution. I always say, you know, you want to be with somebody who ideally you could see, not just by a picture. You have the full working picture of who they are, how they speak, the pitch, the tone in their voice. I mean, we pick up on such subtleties and some things. I mean, something as simple as somebody's tone of their voice will either work for you or will not work for you. And so when you have the full picture, meaning an animated person in front of you, and that is accessible to you, and that you don't have to talk only at certain times, and they only like to text because they come up with some crazy reason why they can never be on the phone. Those are things to be aware of, okay? And the more pieces you see over time, the better information you're going to have. But also, be wise. Don't show people your entire asset portfolio any more than you'd show it to somebody on the street. Lay low. If they like you, they will be interested in spending time with you, even in the small things. And you develop a relationship over time, then you have something solid. And it's not something that's just impulsive or something that you come to regret and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I spent time like that. It's all been done before. But you try to reduce that. And don't go dating shopping when you're pretty wounded. And if you still feel compelled to talk about your exes, then, and that information hasn't been compartmentalized enough, meaning you haven't had the ability to walk it through. And if you were asked, and some people will ask, I'm not going to say they're not going to ask, but if that person doesn't come back with a pretty simple answer that doesn't go into much detail, that tells you that they're pretty stable overall with that situation. Somebody who's got to give you detail after detail after detail, that situation is highly unstable and highly unresolved. And you don't necessarily need to go in there and start helping this person resolve it, okay? Healthier dating means wait for the person to be in a better space, and you'll know when you're in a better space when you don't have to become a personal tell-all. Okay, you wait, you hear what you see, and you do it in different segments and still see if you're interested in that person. So that's where I'm going to close off at this point. And if you like the material I present, I'm going to encourage you or kindly ask you to rate it, because this gives other people an opportunity. I think there's like several million podcasts out there, and with rating systems, as you know, it does help other people find my material. So I would certainly appreciate that. And I certainly appreciate you. And thank you for joining me.